Today I'm here to talk about the past, the present, and the future. I apologize in advance for the American-centric story I'm about to tell. It's an obscure but very important part of American history. It probably sounds familiar to those who lived in East Germany. However, I'm telling it because it relates to our present and how we will shape the future. I highly encourage everyone interested in this topic to read the book Spying on America, the FBI's Domestic Counterintelligence Program by James Davis. It, along with a specific friend of mine who's heavily watchlisted, is the inspiration for what I'm about to say. So, to my friend who is watchlisted and hopefully watching right now, hello. From 1956 to 1971, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, also known as the FBI, ran a series of counterintelligence programs, collectively known as the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO. Realistically, the anarchists of the early 20th century, such as Emma Goldman, faced similar measures, but under totally different legal and usually illegal authority. COINTELPRO was different. It was authorized by the U.S. President Truman and the FBI Director, J. Edgar Hoover, to fight the supposed threat of communism under the cover of total secrecy. And so began McCarthyism, a great shame for my country that destroyed countless lives under the banner of patriotic nationalism. The first COINTELPRO operation was Communist Party USA, or CPUSA. And over the years, COINTELPRO expanded, like all so-called law enforcement seems to do, until it covered nearly every anti-war protester, every anti-Vietnam group, the civil rights movement, and even a few white power groups. The FBI's actions included blackmail, physical violence. They broke up marriages, happily and with glee. They recruited telephone switchboard operators to wiretap phones. They broke into houses to plant listening devices, and much more. They even took actions that resulted in the deaths of completely innocent people. But for nearly the entire time that COINTELPRO was happening, almost no one in America knew, and those targeted were often dismissed as being crazy or worse. In fact, the word COINTELPRO was unknown outside of a circle of those tasked with carrying out these missions and those who had authorized them. In March of 1971, a major nonviolent direct action changed the United States forever. An illegal action uncovered massively illegal activities. A group by the name of the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI broke into a small FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and they liberated over 1,000 classified documents that detailed the COINTELPRO activities of the FBI. They were anonymously released to media outlets and those targeted in a very strategic manner. They did this through the communications networks of that era, the Postal Service, and it was, of course, the most popular message routing service at the time. At first, no newspapers or media outlets would publish the documents. The government was really upset. In March of 1972, however, Wynn magazine broke the story, so a full year later. Probably the most incredible example of a well-known activist targeted was in the 1960s. The FBI attempted to blackmail him into committing suicide just 34 days before he was to receive his Nobel Peace Prize. Martin Luther King Jr., as I'm sure some of you have heard of him, refused to give in to their demands. The FBI failed because he refused to be subjugated by fear, and he refused to give in to their threats. Slowly, and with very specific, long-term strategic thinking, the Citizens Commission released their cache of documents. Victims learned that they were targeted, as well as how they were targeted, at no fault of their own. The Citizens Commission's primary tactical advantage was twofold. First, they were armed with the truth, as written by the oppressor, and secondly, they were anonymous. The FBI's power started with identification, and without the identities of the Citizens Commission, they were powerless to stop the truth from coming to light. The asymmetry offered by anonymity was absolutely the linchpin of their success. Their anonymous publication forced not a show trial or a further persecution, but rather a swift action by those who held the purse strings of the FBI. The FBI had to immediately cease COINTELPRO activities. The leaking of these documents led to the Church Committee, which eventually led to the creation of the American Freedom of Information Act and even the creation of special FISA courts to oversee future law enforcement activities. Victims, where possible, were compensated and new laws were put in place as an attempt to protect the people from their government. The Citizens Commission's tactics were beautiful. Anonymous truth-telling and holding the hypocrisy of the extremely well-documented racist FBI, the so-called law enforcement, holding them account to the public. Their strategy led to massive changes in the way that so-called law enforcement activities were to be carried out in the United States. To this day, no one has learned the identities of the Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI. They have remained anonymous. There was no show trial, as there may be with Julian Assange, and as there is now with the alleged leaker, Bradley Manning. Anonymity created a specific kind of asymmetric power, the power to speak out about injustice without retribution. I wager there was plenty of fear and concern amongst the Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI, but not because of the wrongness of their actions, but because of the lengths that the FBI went to crush dissenters. They had right to be fearful. They held evidence in their hands that the FBI was willing to be involved with murders and pushing people to suicide. There is a strong history of resistance, and we must recontextualize the past and the present to draw out a new understanding for the future. If we draw from the experience with the FBI's abuse and the Citizens Commission, we should see that there are important parallels, both in terms of law enforcement and in terms of direct action. When a group takes an action to block access to a building, they do so because they're trying to disrupt the flows of power and the control that emanates from that building. The Critical Art Ensemble discussed in their seminal work of the 1990s, Electronic Civil Disobedience, that the flows of power were now electronic. Blocking buildings just isn't enough, they argued. After the battle for Seattle, though, we realized that the flows of power are both electronic and analog at the same time. So when Anonymous hacks H.B. Gary and shows ties between corporations and the U.S. government, where they wish to smear Glenn Greenwald for his wonderful journalistic work, where they wish to watch list and harass others, such as myself, in fact, we can see that Anonymous is performing a similar service to the Citizens Commission. Because Anonymous doesn't show all of their cards, they create fear in those who abuse their powers. This destabilizes power structures that do not derive their power from the consent of the governed. Anonymous isn't perfect, but it serves as a banner that helps to create a point of unity amongst those who have had enough. Enough surveillance, enough censorship, enough war crimes, enough lies, and enough cynicism. No movement is perfect, but a lack of perfection does not invalidate the truth that Anonymous has uncovered, or that WikiLeaks has uncovered, or the positive actions that they have taken. Because these days we have a new Pentagon Papers and we have a new Vietnam War protest movement. We have a new COINTELPRO program, as demonstrated by the NSA's warrantless wiretap program of the American people, by Section 215 of the US Patriot Act, and by the brutality of the police against the Occupy movement. I myself have had to deal with extensive harassment without so much as the decency of having a single legal charge or having the privilege of being arrested so that I might have my day in court to fuck them up. Enough is enough. Today's Citizens Commission is, in fact, Anonymous, and other groups aligned in action. Today's FBI is the military-industrial complex and its cronies of privatization. It includes the FBI all over again. H.B. Gary was essentially performing COINTELPRO actions against WikiLeaks and Anonymous. We can see an important parallel with them. Anonymous hacked them. It was the equivalent of breaking into their building and taking their files for the greater good. When they published the files, there was a huge outcry against H.B. Gary for their obviously illegal activities and their partnership with government agencies and their seeking for future partnerships. And so when we see analog denial of service attacks on buildings by those involved with the sit-in, we should know they paved the way for electronic sit-ins against the flows of power, the flow of money controlled by PayPal. When Anonymous performed a denial of service attack on PayPal in protest for them cutting off WikiLeaks, as the PayPal 14 are accused to have done, we know that this is in the rich tradition of nonviolent resistance in the face of abuse of power. There is no permanent damage done, no servers harmed, and no Loic cannon operators have been pepper sprayed in their eyes. Still, there is a lasting impact, and it raises the important debate about the financial blockade against WikiLeaks. Why would we allow that? Would we allow a bank to stop service to all of the Green or Conservative Party members? We need the Daniel Ellsbergs, the Emma Goldmans, the Julian Assange. We need the Rosa Luxemburgs and the Peter Sundas, people willing to publicly take a stand for the greater good. They are powerful and important largely because it is all of us that are behind them. Their courage is contagious, and their action is in support and in solidarity with our actions. It is all of us together that stand with moral authority in the face of tyranny, but not as a mob, rather in principled solidarity. What we need now more than ever is another Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI. And it sounds like Germany needs a Citizens Commission to investigate the Verfassungsschutz. As I understand things, they are now believed to have been working with the extreme right-wing Nazis who recently murdered a number of Turks. Someone must take action against those that enabled these Nazis to murder people. There's a chain of command, a structure of power involved. Those people have names and must be held to account. They have records and documents. This is evidence that must come to light. Just as people will soon confront the Nazis marching in Dresden in a few days' time, we must confront and change the power structures that enable those same Nazis. One of my favorite authors of the 20th century, I'm sure you all know her, since this is Transmediale, Ulrike Meinhof, once wrote, "Protest is when I say I don't like this and that. Resistance is when I see to it that things that I don't like no longer occur. Protest is when I say I will no longer go along with it, and resistance is when I see to it that no one else goes along with it anymore either. Now is the time for nonviolent resistance and for the building of alternatives. History repeats, but the outcome is not guaranteed by hope alone. Rather, it is guaranteed, if anything is, by action. Direct nonviolent action and bold truth-telling. We must refuse to be silent, and we must take a stand against the fascists by whatever name they call themselves, under whatever flag they fly. So who is that someone who should take action? It's me, and it's you. It's all of us. And who are we? We're all anonymous.